Good morning, everybody. Great to see everyone here this morning. If you're visiting with us, we are the Cape Town Church of Christ, and it's great to have you with us this morning. Good for me to be back. I don't think I've been in church for 6 weeks, so it's the longest that I've ever been away. Good to be back. I'll give you sort of a quick health update from myself. I went in for minor spinal surgery 6 weeks ago. Obviously, I have progressive back problems. It's called spondylosis and arthritis in my back. So basically, I have an old person's back.
And I'm only 45.
So I keep on having discs between vertebrae that pop. And when they pop, it obviously squeezes nerves. And then I lose a leg here and there, what have you. And I had to have some of them fused, which was, as I look back, a little bit more painful than what I anticipated. And also the recovery process was also certainly longer than what I anticipated. So I thought it was going to be sort of a quick in and out. It wasn't that quick in and out. So I ended up spending about 4 days in hospital, 7 days in rehab. And then when I got out, I had a very interesting thing. I had, because of the nerve, one of the nerves being either something swelling against it or what have you, this was a very interesting exercise. I could not stand still. So I could walk from day four, I could walk about 2 kilometers a day easily and quick. But I couldn't stand still. As soon as I stood still, my leg would go into severe spasm and cramps. But I mean, pain scale 10 out of 10. So for about 10 days, I could not stand still. So I literally had to walk doing everything. I ate and walked in the house. I had to walk around in the shower, believe it or not. And as soon as I stood still for longer than 2 seconds, it would flare up and then it would take about a half an hour to go away. So I was very determined not to stand still. But that too passed. So slowly but surely, I'm getting better. Thank you so much for so many messages and prayers. And at this stage, I can actually sit for about 2 minutes. I can now sit for about 10 minutes. And I can stand for about 10, 20 minutes before I start getting uncomfortable. So I literally just arrived on the last song. And after the message, I'm going to leave again. But prayerfully, literally day by day, I'm getting better. So next week, I should prayerfully be a whole lot better. So, and the week thereafter, and the week thereafter, and the week thereafter. So again, thank you for everyone's encouragement. Please say prayers as this journey continues. Because as far as I understand from my orthopedic surgeon, this is again operation number 3, with many to come. Okay, so I hope to space them. Because it wasn't fun. Let me tell you that. I certainly underestimated that. And this is a very normal procedure. I think every one of us knows someone that has gone through it. When the anesthetist asked me, what are you, any allergies? And I just said, pain. That's my allergy. I just don't do well with pain. But prayerfully, step by step, we'll go forward. So, good to be back. Like I said, it's been a while. Just a couple of family matters that I want to speak about before we actually get into today's message. I know last week, obviously, Duncan and Lisa were here, and we took up an offering for the church in Harare, Zimbabwe. Obviously, Zimbabwe is constantly in turmoil about something, and their currency, I mean, obviously, the currency disappeared, I think, about a year or so ago, and they now have bond notes, and I mean, it's constant total chaos. But what was super encouraging is, as a congregation, we collected last Sunday 8,000 rand towards that, and then in the next couple of days, people deposited about another 9,000 rand into the compassion account towards it. So we were able to collect 17,000 rand that we were able to send to them this week. So in a way, I want to say, give yourself a hand. I think super encouraging. and this in February. Okay, what I mean by that is, I think most people in December, you spend more than what you should. Okay, and then it's catch up for the rest of the year. So I think the church there will be a very encouraged. Matter of fact, I got a letter from them saying, and this sounds very biblical as they wrote this. I think they took a Bible on the side and then says, to the saints, that's not us. to the saints. So if you maybe felt a little bit discouraged this week and not sure whether you're standing, to the saints in the Cape Town Church of Christ, you have once again come to our rescue at a time when the Harare Church and the country is facing economic challenges. When the call came, you, my brothers and sisters, did not hesitate to take up a collection for our benevolent needs. It is with that in mind that we say a big thank you for your kindness. It is our prayer that the Lord who gives generously without finding fault will reward you and reward your act of faith. We are indeed grateful. Proverbs 11 says, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Your brother in Christ, Edwin Shumba. So again, thank you for that. I think we'll go a far way for them. Then also, just a reminder, I was also not here when they announced our special contribution for last year. We obviously collected, I think, something in the region of 939,000 Rand, which is super encouraging for a church of just under 300 members to be able to collect that amount of money. And that will obviously go again towards different ends. Our support of the Church of Malawi. We'll briefly have the leaders there visit us later this year as well. But then also one of the components in that I just want to remind people of is that we want to be able to, in this year, hire a full-time youth minister. Okay? But currently our normal month-to-month giving doesn't allow us to do that. So obviously we put it before the church last year. People repledged themselves. January, our normal offering was a little bit lower than usual, which is, again, the recovery from December. But I do want to encourage us, for those of us that have pledged, to continue to honor our pledges, because our plan is as soon as we've worked it out financially as to as soon as we reach a certain level of income over three consecutive months, we would be able to make this higher and then support the shortfall from our special contribution that we were able to set aside this year. Does that make sense, I hope? So that's what it's going for. I'm very excited about this. I know that our youth ministry love the teenagers. They're the next generation, and they are growing. We have projected this out in 3-4 years. We're going to have 54 teens, okay? In the congregation, and it just keeps on growing, and that's without us adding any other members to the congregation. So just from who we have, so that's going to grow. We need someone to help them move into a better future. And here's one of my big things. And people often say, why as the older people feel, now I'm part of the older people group, but it's just an age, not a spirit, but feel why the youth, why not us, why the youth. If the church ages, we die. Because we die with our members. We have to forever, till Jesus comes back, invest in the young, as they are tomorrow's family group leaders, tomorrow's ministry staff, the people of tomorrow that takes us into a better future. I listened to a talk, and I'm going a little bit off topic this week but I listened to a talk this week where a guy, as a minister, shared that his mom had Alzheimer's, and he was already, he had his own children while she had Alzheimer's, and it was early onset of Alzheimer's. She came to live with him for 2 years, and she has accumulated, he himself is financially stable, but she's accumulated a lot of properties and things, and as the lawyer sort of came to sort out her will and where all of that was going, she just said to him, my son, he will make the decisions. And he said, then he had an epiphany about his own children. He said, oh my word, I'm raising my own caregivers. Okay? And that's literally what's happening. In your home, the way you treat your kids, you better be nice to them. Because they will be your caregivers. But not only in our immediate families, but also spiritually, we are raising in Kids Zone and in the front rows here, we are raising our caregivers. We are investing in people that will help us as we are older and the faith in years. So please continue to pray about that. Last comment before I start is something else that we are experimenting with is we are on Sundays making a short podcast. This is very elementary phases, and we're experimenting with it, called at this stage, It's Your Move. And what it is, it's a little interview with regards to the sermon that just went by. So actually, James and I recorded immediately after the service. And the idea of it is that what usually happens on Sundays is you sit here in a Sunday service and you think, oh, wow, yeah, good point, love the idea, really need to become that, want to work on that, want to go that level, this, that, this, that, this, that. And then you walk out of the door and reality sets back in. And even worse yet, Monday morning, you're back into life. So the idea is we're recording these podcasts based on the message to help you think of what are some next steps that you can take, that you can even listen to on your way to work on a Monday morning. So how many of us have received any of those? Okay, and how many of us received it and actually listened to it? Okay, so some are listening to it. So we'll continue to experiment with that and get it better, and eventually we'll put it on iTunes and Android store as it gains traction, but we are trying to work it out. Amen. That was a long opening hello back. Why don't we say a prayer, and then we'll get into today's message. Let's say a prayer. Father, thank you. Thank you so much for you, for who you are, that you are gracious, that you are kind, that you are merciful, that you desire deeply to have a relationship with each of us. You deeply desire for the world that you have made to continue to flourish and go from greatness to greatness until at the end the whole world is filled with your glory as the water covers the seas, and that you have called us into that task to play a role in it. You have given us your son as a model, not only of inspiration, but as breaking the chains that sin has on us so that we can be who you've made us to be. I pray this morning as we close our series on doing things together as a congregation that you will please lead me, give me the energy to be able to do the talk well, and for us to have open hearts. I pray in your son's name. Amen. Okay. As a young Christian, many years ago, 25, 26 years ago, I must sometime put up a photo of what I looked like back then. I looked for one younger, but it was a typical thing of where, I don't know, typical, it was typical for me, where all the rules in school, and then you come out of school and then there are no rules, and so I had long hair, and I had really long hair. I mean, literally, I know it's hard for people to imagine, some of us were around at that time, and was leaning a little bit towards the alternative side, and I became a Christian through God's kindness. A great brother helped me to become a Christian. And then as the weeks rolled by, he tried to help me to be a little bit more relatable. So the question was, with the way that I looked, both in dress code and in hair, I thought, wow, you know, am I helping their family group? Or am I causing hurt to it as people come along and say, who is this guy? I did not respond well to it at all. So I thought about it, listened to what he said, and then this was my very humble response. I said, listen, dude, I don't and I've never had an appreciation for your undressing or hairstyle. But have I said anything on it? No. Some things remain unsaid. And again, he was wonderful. He tried to navigate his way through it to help me back on sort of just some form of godly behavior. I remember that incident. Then I remember another incident. Obviously, we believe as a congregation in a high standard of purity with dating couples, treated her as a sister with absolute purity, and that sex and all of that is beautiful from God, and it's built for marriage. And so this Lisa and I were dating, and the church leader came to me, but he was my mentor, and he said to me, hey, rumor has it that apparently you, every time you see Lisa, you give her a peck kiss, hello and goodbye. Okay, now obviously that passage that says treat younger women as sisters with absolute purity, it says like a sister with absolute purity. I don't have a sister, but if I had a sister, I don't see a problem with giving her a big kiss, hello and goodbye. And so this was my response to it. Okay, so I said, Listen, yes, that is true. I don't have a sister, as I know the scripture talks about, but I do have a mother. And every time I see my mom, I give her a big kiss, hello, and goodbye. So can you please take the Bible and show me where that is wrong? The voice of humility. At that moment, I think I started to quickly learn that as a church family and as family groups, the question is not whether we are going to have conflict. Conflict we will have. But rather the question would be, how would we resolve the conflict when we have it? Will we resolve it in a God-honoring way? And this isn't any relationship. Obviously, getting married was and is no different. You can imagine that spirit that I had, which the brothers were very graciously trying to help me to move, to sort of sand off the rough edges, to prepare me for my poor wife, as to what that would look like in the marriage. You can only imagine. But so again, early on in our marriage, I had to, it was very bumpy. Now, you obviously think, hey, I'm a Christian, she's a Christian, we're going to get married, and everything is just going to be la, 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 la. You know, it's Tangled movie, it's the prince falls in love with the princess, and they live happily ever after, and what have you. And it wasn't quite like that. I mean, we certainly loved one another, but I didn't know how to resolve conflict. I was never taught how to resolve conflict. The tendency, obviously, is fight or flight. That's what most of us do. You either take it head on or you just run for the hills. And I had to learn to do that. Now, yes, something that I've come to realize over the last couple of years, or months really, more and more in the church, looking at my own family and then looking at the church, is I love my wife. I love my three girls. I think prayerfully we have a good family and a healthy family, but we have challenges. And it's never perfect. Everyone doesn't get up in the morning, la, 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 la. You know, bags are packed, we're ready to go to school, the food baskets are packed, everyone's happy, we're all good again. There's conflict. And I think what happens when we come into the church is we think that I'm going to be a part of this church that is enormously diverse from age, backgrounds, racial diversity, everything, and we're just going to la, 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 okay? And I'm going to be in a family group where, again, in the family group, people should look different than me, be different than me, and we're just going to all get along. And it's not true. You're not all just going to get along. There's going to be conflict, and it's normal. And yet, God's whole plan is to renew and restore creation in and through us as Christians and community, as His family. And we see in the early church these house churches everywhere that would bring His light and His new creation into the world as a family. So what we tend to do is I'm in a family group. I'm part of a family group, spiritual family group. We bump heads. I don't agree. So what do? Hey, I don't think this family group's for me. Let me go and try this one. Instead of figuring out how to resolve conflict. So what I want to talk about today is how do we resolve conflict in a godly manner? First Timothy chapter 4 says, in verse 7, Paul says to Timothy, train yourself, older man, younger man, train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Timothy was, I think, in Ephesus. These guys had, everyone was in gym. It was a big thing. What you looked like was a big thing. Muscle was a big thing. And so he says to him, listen, your dude, that is of some value. It's good to look good. And I know a number of us have lost a lot of weight. I don't know if you've noticed in the congregation. Some of them you can't see anymore. Okay? I won't mention their names. Now, unfortunately, we also all know what you lose somehow, someone else picked up. Okay? And we won't mention those names either. But physical training is of some value, but godliness counts for now, both into the future. And so he says, train yourself to be godly. What I wanted to do in the Christian life and what I wanted to do in relationships is I wanted to just come naturally. Somehow, Lisa and I are going to have a conflict. Someone else and I are going to have a conflict. I'm going to stand over there, and as the conflict comes up, the Spirit's going to fall on me. My eyes are going to flip back in my head and then flip back again, and I'm just going to be kind, and I'm just going to be awesome, and things are just going to be great, and it's going to go well. And realize, no. I need to stop trying to be godly and start training to be godly. You don't go into the gym, or at least I can't do it. I can't just go to the gym and suddenly now bench press 100 kilograms. No, I need to train towards that end. And so the level of conflict resolving that the scriptures talks about doesn't come naturally for me. The muscles are unexercised, and so I need to train to figure out how to do it well. Let me see a quick show of hands here. Who of us finds it relatively easy to peacefully resolve conflict, particularly with your spouse and your kids? Amen. I want to say, give that man a bells. Well, then she agrees with him. Now, Benny, you can go outside, play with the kids, what have you, while the rest of us figure this out. And so a number of years ago, I tried to work out how long it was. Somewhere between 5 or 10 years ago, I came to the conclusion that when I'm in the conflict, it is too late for me to figure out how to resolve it, that I have to be prepared for it. And prepared in a way that I don't know it's coming, but somehow I need to beef up the muscle to be able to do it. And what it made me think of is a first aid kit that you should be having a first aid kit in your home. You should be having a first aid kit in your car. When we have church camps and whatever, there's a first aid kit so that when someone gets hurt, we just yank out the kit. Okay? We don't then suddenly say, man, has anyone got some bandage here? Or a stapler that we can staple this guy back together again. The first aid kit is there. And so I came to realize for myself, and this was purely done for myself, was, and for myself and Lisa, was I need to have a first aid kit in conflict resolution. So in other words, I need to have a prepared kit that when I see us walking into that conflict zone, that I can take out the kit and that I'm ready to take out what's in that kit and apply it to the situation. Because if I'm not ready with that kit, the emotions are hopelessly too heightened, and I'm not going to be able to resolve it in a godly manner at all. And so then what I started putting together, again, this is for my own purposes, and prayerfully you'll be able to learn some of it today, and you might take some of it not. I want to encourage you as we go through this for you to build your own kit. So here are some things that works for me, not necessarily going to work for you, but I certainly suggest the kit. And there are two kits that we're going to talk about today. One is the initiator's kit, and the other one is the responder's kit. So the initiator's kit is there. There you see the guy. He's got his initiator's little first aid kit with him. And who's the other guy? The other guy's the devil. Okay, that's your spouse over there. Okay, so that is your spouse, that is your son, that's your boss, that's someone else in your family group, or whatever. So the initiator's kit is, I'm unhappy about something, they have sinned against me, they've hurt me in my mind, and I'm not going to initiate some conflict with them. So that's kit number one. Kit number two we're going to take a look, it's just the reverse picture, is I'm minding my own business and someone comes and initiates this conversation with me. What should be in my kit to be ready to meet the demands of the reality that I'm facing? So let's jump in. Initiator's kit. First thing that needs to be in the initiator's kit, and this is most probably the most important thing, is you have to remember who the enemy is. Ephesians 6 verse 12, Paul says, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood. Not against my spouse, not against my parents, not against my son, not against my neighbor, not against my boss, not against my family group leader or someone else in the family group with me. Our struggle is not against flesh or blood, flesh or blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world and the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So we have a conflict situation. You hurt me. You said something that hurt me. You neglected to say something that I wanted you to have said. You did something that hurt me, or you neglected to do something that I thought you were going to do. It was just Valentine's Day, and I'm sure that there are a number of spouses that thought, oh, man, I'm sure my husband's just going to treat me so special. And now suddenly he's realizing, was there a Valentine's Day? Okay. So that kind of scenario is happening. Then you ask yourself, so who's the enemy? That's very obvious. You are. You are the enemy. You're the one that hurt me. You're the one that, again, dropped the ball or neglected to do this or treated me in an unfair fashion or did again what you have promised so many times you would not do. You are the enemy. That's not what Paul is saying. He is saying, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, not against the person that is standing there before you in your mind, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of the dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in their heavenly realm. My fight is not with you, but against the dark forces of evil that is standing behind you. I think we completely underestimate Satan and the dark forces of evil. Our view of Satan tends to be a little bit like this picture, where it is a sweet red cartoon figure who is, how harmless can that thing be? Okay? And we see Satan as that. The Bible nowhere describes exactly what Satan looks like, but I think a more realistic depiction would be more this picture. That is, and the likes of what is with us in the room today. That is something in the likes of that is who is with you. Every time that you get hurt, every conflict that you have, Satan is right there. Revelation 12 says he is the accuser, accusing you, accusing others. He is called Lucifer, the serpent, the dragon, the wicked one, and Beelzebub. And John 8, Jesus says, he is the father of lies, and his number one goal is to destroy your relationships. Your relationship with God, but also your relationship with your spouse, your kids, and those who you're trying to do life with in God's kingdom. That is his number one goal. And he does it very subtly. What he does is he steps in, he says his piece, and then he steps out and just watches the fallout. As with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. He is the enemy. And if you and your spouse or your parents or another Christian is in conflict, what you have to understand is very difficult to understand, but what you have to understand is the person in front of me is not the enemy. Our common enemy is Satan. Easy to know and understand on paper. How many times in my life have I, in our marriage, particularly when I started initiating this plan for myself and with other people, where someone is really nasty with me and they're saying their piece and I'm sitting there, I'm smiling, and all I'm saying to myself, he's not the enemy, he's not the enemy, he's not the enemy. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He is. Look, it looks like he has a fork. Okay. No, he's not the enemy. He's not the enemy. He is not the enemy. The temptation will always be to make people the enemy. When you do, Satan has won and the relationship is lost. So whenever you're in conflict, I know this is hard because you're emotionally charged and involved. You have to remember who the enemy is. So take that out. This is, you want to speak to Fred. Fred hurt you, your husband hurt you, your kid hurt you, your parents hurt you. Number one thing is not the enemy. Number two. Now all of this happens in progress before you even talk to the person. You need to be self-controlled and alert. 1 Peter 5 verse 8 says, be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, there we have it again, the devil prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Satan, our enemy, Lucifer, Beelzebub, the wicked one, the evil one, the prince of this age, whatever you want to call him, every day goes from relationship to relationship, marriage to marriage, parent to kid, kid to parent, family group to family group, boss to employee, colleagues. He goes from a relationship to relationship. And what is he looking for? Someone who is not self-controlled and alert. Because that is the person whom he can devour. Someone who has a short fuse. Someone who easily give in to their emotions. We tend to do one or two things when someone has upset us. It's called fight or flight. Fight is you basically throw all Christ's likeness out of the door and just go for it. Why? Because I just had to get it off of my heart. Have you ever had a conversation like that? Either you were the initiator or someone did it with you. Listen, I just want to tell you, man, there's something heavy on my heart. I just had to get it off of my heart. And you sit there and you think, holy smoke. The devil embodied in the flesh. Self-controlled and alert. No, but that's just, I cannot help it. It's just who I am. So I'm just going to tell you as it is. Now, that kind of spirit might be who you are, but it's certainly not who Jesus was, and it's not what he is calling us to be. I certainly lean towards that end, and through tons of help and Bible study and prayer and discipling and whatever, I'm less so. But I've had to learn, you can't just, don't just say to the dude, listen, I've never said anything about your hair and your clothes, so why are you speaking to me? I can't just say, hey, listen, man, show me in the Bible. Self-controlled and alert. Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool gives full vent to his anger. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but the wise man keeps himself under control. He's able to breathe. Stay calm. So that's obviously the fighters. Who of us do that? Who of us are the fighter? I am. Who of us think that their spouse is the fighter, but they didn't put up their hand? Too afraid, eh? Because the fight's coming afterwards. Just getting it out of your heart, just getting it out, all that you're doing is you're putting it right on Satan's lap. The other option is no better, and that's the flight one. On paper, it looks, or physically, it looks better, but it's the flight response. The flight response is that you process it for days, weeks, months, years, sometimes even decades. And then one day you suddenly gain clarity on what it is that you are feeling. And then you feel like this is now the moment to go and put on the other person's lap what has taken me 10 years to figure out. Now, meanwhile, the other poor soul has no idea what has happened for 10 years. They're actually thinking, hey, life is good. And then suddenly you come and you say, listen, here's just how you make me feel. And you think, gee, but today was a good day. I gave you flowers and everything. And then they say, okay, well, here it is. And they take you down memory lane for the last 10 years. Everything that you've said, everything that you've done, everything that you have felt. It doesn't help. Be self-controlled and alert. Take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5. I have never taken one of these two paths in my life where it has worked out. Be self-controlled and alert. So one, you're not the enemy. Two, self-controlled and alert. Three, get a godly perspective. Psalm 127 verse 1 says, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stands guard in vain. If God is not in the mix, if he's not going to be helping you to resolve this, to think through this, to pray through this, to work it out, your efforts are going to be in vain. So first thing you should do, one is, that's not the devil standing in front of me. I can see the devil standing behind the person and working in the situation. I'm not going to give in to fight or flight. I'm going to ask some questions, which we'll get to later. But I'm going to first take this thing to God in order to get a godly perspective. I need to first wrestle it through with him. Don't deal with stuff in the heat of the moment unless you are by nature as calm as a cucumber. Let God help you develop a godly perspective. A godly perspective in prayer as I'm praying, but I cannot believe that my wife was late again. Didn't I say we have to leave this time? I cannot believe it. The world's going to come to an end. Okay, so pray through it. Get a godly perspective. Is the world ending? Someone said something that wasn't that kind. Is the world ending? Is 20 years of friendship now based on that one comment? My wife is great with this. I have really had to and still have to and will forever have to work on my tongue. And I have, through the years, I've often said something stupid. You know, stupid, it just... And what she has the ability to do is that she takes it for what it is, a stupid comment. She doesn't throw 20 years of marriage out the door because of one stupid comment. Okay? But sometimes we don't see it in the moment, and we need to go to God in prayer. We need to get perspective of ourselves. We need to get perspective of the situation, and we then need to get perspective of the person whom we have conflict with, whom we believe is obviously the devil incarnate. Psalm 103 says, as far as the east is from the west, so far has he, God, removed our transgressions from us. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows how we are formed. He remembers we are but dust. I need to take it before God, and I need to remember. Oh, we are so self-righteous. When I make a mistake, don't people understand that I'm just but dust? Right? I mean, have you never made mistakes? When the other person makes a mistake, dust is out the door. You know, man up, buddy. Okay? Perspective is, remember that we are but dust. Perspective is, listen, there's a lot of things happening here. The person's feeling a lot of things. I need to have some objectivity here. Let me not get sucked into it. Let me just remember that this person too was made from dust. It doesn't mean I'm not going to speak about it. It just means that I have perspective on I'm made from dust, they're made from dust. Number four. Okay, so again, you're not the devil. I'm self-controlled and alert. I'm not going to give in emotions, either fight or flight right now. I'm going to go to God. I'm going to gain perspective. And now number four, and this is a super hard one that makes an enormous, enormous difference, is communicate your feelings in a loving way. So I've now realized you're not the enemy. I've been self-controlled. I've taken to God. I've consulted godly advisors as to what I want to speak to you about. now I'm going to come to you and I'm going to communicate the truth in the kindest way possible, the most loving way. And Colossians 4:6 says, let your conversations always be full of grace. Always full of grace. Now, when he says that your conversations be full of grace, if this is grace and this is your conversation, do you think he's meaning that? Okay, so I'm going to come, I'm upset with you, you've hurt me, you've hurt our relationship, you've hurt me in a family group, whatever it is. What's full of grace? Full of grace, he says, let your conversations be full of grace, full of grace, full of grace, full of grace, full of grace. So I'm coming to you, I'm not letting it go, I'm not sweeping it under the carpet, but the way I'm going to speak to you, it's going to be from one mud man made from dust to another mud man on another mud woman, full of grace. 1 Corinthians 13 says love is patient. Not love brings roses. I'm not saying love can't bring roses, but that's not what it says. Love is patient, love is kind, it's not proud, it's not rude, it's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It always protects the relationship, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. I need to make the truth as easy to hear as possible. Language, demeanor, everything makes an enormous amount of difference. You're having a conflict with someone, and let's say someone's very critical of you in the family group or what have you, your spouse, a child. The one way to do it is, listen, you're the most critical person I've ever met in my life, and I'm actually going to send my psychology bills to you. Okay, because you're the origin of it all. And you take me back to my childhood and all my problems. That's one way. Another possible way is, sweetie, now only sweetie if it's actually your spouse. If you're a brother and it's another brother, don't do the sweetie thing. Okay. If you're an employee and it's your boss, don't do the sweetie thing. But it's, but it's sweetie. Sometimes when you say certain kind of things, it feels demeaning to me. And I know that you most likely don't mean for it to be demeaning or hurtful, and that it might be very on the spur of the moment. But the way that it lands with me is that I feel demeaned and hurt, and I just wanted to know if we could maybe be able to talk through it. I'm sure that's how we all talk in marriage. I'm sure that's how we talk with our kids. That needs to be in the kit. Okay, so I want to bring up something with someone. They've hurt me in some form or fashion. First thing I do is, you're not the enemy. Second thing that I do is I say, be self-controlled and alert. Do not let the emotions get to you, and just do it in the moment. Okay. Third thing that I do is take it to God. I'm gaining perspective on myself, on the person, on the whole situation. And then after counsel, either with the Lord or with others, until I get better with this, I communicate it in the most loving way possible. Kit number one. Kit number two. I think I've got 2 minutes to do kit number two according to that clock. So kit number two also has four things in it. There are some similarity. Number one, remember who the enemy is. Okay, so now the kid is around. They can skip to the next slide. I'm not going to recap everything. Now the situation is around. Someone is addressing something with me. So in other words, I'm minding my own business. I'm not on the other side of the fence. I'm minding my own business. I'm happy. Today's Valentine's Day, you know, whatever. I'm happy. Now someone else comes and says, hey, listen, I just want to bring up something with you. Or even some of you here in the fellowship. I mean, I've heard it all through the years on myself where, listen, I've had people come up to me in the fellowship and say, hey, can I talk to you? I say, sure. He says, do you remember in 1993... when you had that conversation there with me at McDonald's? I'm thinking, dude, I hardly remember you. Let alone the conversation we had in 1993. So how do I now deal with it? It's coming my way. Number one, the person's not the enemy. I'm not going to go through the same text, but we have to remember someone is coming to you because they're feeling something deeply. They somehow felt hurt. Don't see them as the enemy. There needs to be some objectivity, realizing that, again, the dark forces of evil is behind this, wanting to utilize this to hurt the relationship. So I have to keep calm and say, what I have in front of me is a wounded soul. And I might or might not have played a role in wounding that soul. But they're not the enemy. Number two, I'm going to go through these quickly. This is hard. This is the hardest thing. The hardest thing. You have to humble yourself. Philippians 2, and your relationships with one another have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. For Jesus to reach out to us, to bridge the gap, to break the power of sin, although he had equality with God, he was one with God. We know the passages, the world was created in him and through him. He made himself nothing. He emptied himself out in order to step into the gap, to relate to us, to understand us, and ultimately to be the perfect, obedient sacrifice. Humble self, empty self out. If someone initiates conflict with you, you're going to have, particularly if you're a reactive person, you're going to have to dig deeper and wider than what you've ever dug for humility. You're going to have to make yourself nothing. You're going to have to empty yourself out. This is not a time to bring up your issue. You know how this works? You have an issue with someone, but you keep quiet. You know, it's not your issue. And now suddenly they bring up the issue. So they bring up the issue, and you think, okay, you're bringing up the issue. Let me tell you my issue. You say, I'm not helpful around the house. Do you know what you are? Okay, that's one option. Sure, none of us has ever done it, but we know many people. Okay, or it's, listen, I don't like your tone. I understand what you're saying, but I said, let's park what you're saying for aside now. And just the spirit, the timing, and how all of this is going down, doesn't fly, honey. Okay, not going to be working. You have to dig deep. You have to empty yourself out. You're going to have to fight for it. And let me tell you, again, we're talking about emergency situations. The only way that you're going to be able to do this is if you remain in the vine, being Jesus day by day. Meaning where he is the source of life and energy for me, so that when I am in the furnace, I actually have some reserves to dig. Because if I'm not in the vine and my relationship with God is haphazard, then I'm dependent on natural self. And natural self is proud. Natural self is defensive. Natural self is emotive. I have to remain in the vine. I have to dig deep. Number three. So, they're not the enemy. I'm going to humble myself. Somehow I'm going to not explode here. Number three, I need to seek to understand. Proverbs 20 verse 5, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. This Bible verse was drilled into me by everyone around me for over a decade. The purposes of man's heart are deep waters. We are complex. Everyone is complex. You don't think you're complex, but you think your neighbor is. Oh man, I'm just married to such a complex person. I'm complex. We're all complex. Purposes of man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. So what is the third thing you need to do when someone initiates conflict with you? You need to seek to understand. Wow, they're pretty aggressive. Man, they look like they could possibly kill you. Okay, you sort of stand a little bit to the side. You're away from the knives and things. You know that this could potentially be dangerous. But what am I doing? I'm trying to seek to understand. I'm not understanding. Wow, they look mad as hell. I don't understand why. Let me ask. Wow, so what did I say? And when did I say it? How did that make you feel? I'm seeking to understand. This is the number one tool for me over the last 20 years in trying to help people, as I cannot help you if I cannot understand you. So when I try and help someone with something, I ask them lots and lots of questions because I'm trying to understand. Where are you coming from? What is the reason? What is the context for you feeling this way? I just want to understand, and for men particularly, this is incredibly hard because we just want to fix things. Here's a big thing that I had to learn to make all the difference for me. Understanding does not equal agreement. Okay, so my wife comes to me and she said I came home and she just felt like I didn't greet her. And the reason I didn't greet her is that I've not appreciated our 20 years of marriage. Okay, now she's never done that. I'm using it as an example. Okay, now understanding doesn't mean like, yes, I agree with you that I've not appreciated our 20 years of marriage. Understanding is I can understand that you felt that way. I can understand that that reaction or that event could make that happen for you, not for me. We're different because this is what we do. I won't respond that way. Why would you think that way? It's a stupid way to think. No. If you were them, if you had their package, if you had their story, if you had their background, if you had their everything, could you possibly have thought the same thought? Could you possibly have felt the same thing? And I understand. I understand. And then you respond, Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. And you say, I'm so sorry that I have hurt you. And the last thing in the kit is you have to bring about healing. If you've hurt a person over a long period of time, it's your responsibility to bring about healing and you need to ask them what they would take. So if my wife had felt like not greeting her is 20 years of bad marriage, then obviously there's something behind it. And it's my responsibility to figure out first, just bring calm to the situation. Sweetie, I'm so sorry that I've made you feel that way. I'm so sorry that I didn't greet you and I'm so sorry that you feel that way. Then when we are in a better and a good space, in a happier moment, okay, not in a moment where there's chaos, then I ask, hey, I know the other day you mentioned that you feel like I've not appreciated you for 20 years. And I was just wondering, what were some other things that you were feeling? And what have I done to make you feel that way, to make you feel unloved, if your kids feel unloved, to make you feel disrespected, if your parents feels you disrespected them? And then the question is, what? I would love to heal this. I'm so sorry for hurting you. I would love to heal. I would love to bring healing. What will it take? What would healing look like for you? What can I do from my side? And most likely you have to understand that the conflict has been long and big and deep, it's not going to be one conversation that fixes it. So I need to be willing to say, I'll pay the price. And if this is what it requires, I want you to feel understood. I want to be there for you and I want to bring healing. In closing, so the responder's kid, remember who the enemy is, humble yourself, seek to understand, bring about healing. Can you imagine for a moment just how different our relationships would look like in our small groups, family groups, in our homes, your relationship with your parents, your relationship with your kids, with your spouse? If we were just to go to the Bible and say, let me go prepared into these things. Let me not in the spur of the moment deal with it, but what would be a godly manner to deal with it? And that is my prayer for us as a congregation. I said, listen here, I so often hear this, we as a church are unloving. We as a church this, we as a church that. Okay, listen, we as a church are a mess. Why? Because we're in it. And we are sinners. But can you imagine if we just take these things on board and say, we're going to resolve it? We're not going to fight it out. We're not going to sweep it under the carpet until it explodes. But we are going to talk through it. This is my kit. This has served me for many years. Sometimes I've used it more than I have not. But there are definitely times that I've not. Maybe it doesn't work for you, but what I want to encourage you is figure out your kit. What would it look like for you if you want to bring up something? What would it look like if someone has conflict for you? Good to be back. Great to see everybody. God bless. Amen.